92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show.
My name is Gary Parish. Brad Carson is in studio producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day. No obstacles. No disruptions. And I hope you aren't an Ole Miss fan who is one of those anti-Colin Kaepernick fellas, because if so, the Ole Miss basketball team put you in a tricky spot this weekend. 8 Rebels became the first high major men's basketball players to take a knee during the national anthem. The school subsequently backed them. Interesting story. We'll dive into it momentarily. But first, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. 4:20, Adrian Wojnarowski is ESPN's NBA insider, the best NBA newsbreaker in the world. He broke the news last week that Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to be sidelined for the foreseeable future. I'm going to ask him about that, talk Grizz with him, talk Lakers with him as well, because our king and savior, LeBron James, is in town. Woj is going to be here right around 4:20. When I finish that segment, I'll do 4 notable stories at 4:44, at which point I'm going to discuss 4 previously undiscussed stories. Among them, the Tigers went to Wichita State and won this weekend. Jeremiah Martin went big again. So Memphis is now 74th at KenPom, 60th in the NCAA's net ranking. Things moving in the right direction. We'll talk Tiger basketball around 4:44. Tennessee lost again this weekend. OT to a shorthanded LSU team. Controversial ending, and now a controversial referee story attached to it. Get into that a little later on this hour. Massive game in the Big 12 tonight. Kansas State at Kansas, and if KSU wins, Bill Self's string of Big 12 titles basically going to be done at 14 years. I'll tell you about that just before 5 o'clock. In Gonzaga is the new number one in the AP poll. I'll tell you why that's sensible during 4 notable stories at 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calk is just like always. Then I will eventually do dinner to go and get out of here. So that's the rundown. We got a lot to get to. But I wanted to start with Ole Miss basketball, because the Rebels hosted Georgia on Saturday inside the pavilion, and it was a game between 2 unranked teams, so basically off of the national radar. Hell, it wasn't even on my radar. If you'd have asked me, hand to heart, on Saturday morning, who Ole Miss was playing later that day, I would have had no idea. I was more focused on Duke, Syracuse, LSU, Tennessee, Kansas, Texas Tech, games like that. Regardless, Ole Miss, Georgia quickly became the biggest story in college basketball, and not because Ole Miss won 72-71 to remain on track to make the NCAA tournament in Kermit Davis's first season. Rather, it was because with some pro-Confederacy groups organizing a march onto campus, 8 Ole Miss basketball players took a knee during the national anthem to peacefully protest the hate groups. It started with 1 player, then 5 more quickly joined him, then 2 more knelt near the end of the Star-Spangled Banner. Ole Miss guard Brian Tyree is one of the players who knelt, and he was asked about it afterward. Here's what he said. He said, quote, "We saw one of our teammates kneeling, and we just didn't want him to be alone. We're just tired of these hate groups coming to our school and portraying our campus like it's our actual university hosting these hate groups," end quote. Predictably, there was some pushback from fans, nonsensically talking about how it's disrespectful to troops to kneel during the anthem while protesting hate groups or anything else. And so Brian Tyree later tweeted, quote, "To the people that fight for this country, my teammates and I meant no disrespect to everything that you do for us, but we had to take a stand to the negative things that went on today on our campus. Hashtag we need to change." Now, whether you agree with it or not, this was a significant college basketball moment because, like I pointed out, since Colin Kaepernick started his protest during the anthem back in 2016, no high major men's basketball players had ever taken a knee during the national anthem. It had not happened anywhere in this country. And I'll tell you, as a Mississippian, I did not think my home state would be where it would first happen, for obvious reasons. But it happened in Mississippi on Saturday. And what was most interesting is that this protest during the anthem is not something the players discussed with their coach or their athletic director or anybody else in advance. Coach Kermit Davis did not know this was happening until it was happening. AD Ross Bjork did not know this was happening until it was happening. And yet afterward, both men supported the players. Kermit Davis said the following, quote, "This was all about the hate groups that came to our community. It's created a lot of tension. I think our players made an emotional decision, and we respect our players' decision to do that." Ross Bjork, the athletic director, he said the following, quote, "Our players are human. They're students. They see what's happening on our campus. These people that come here and spill hate and bigotry and racism, we don't want them on our campus. Our players stood up for that. It had nothing to do with the anthem. It had nothing to do with anything beyond we don't want those people here. They're protesting during our game, and that's not right because that's not the Ole Miss that I know. We talk to the players about that in the locker room, and we support them because we don't want those people here either. The university doesn't want them. Our town doesn't want them. They're out of state. They're not from here. So good for the players to stand up and make a statement." End quote. Now, a cynic might say Kermit and Ross had no choice but to back the players, even in a very conservative state. And in fairness, that cynic would be right, because to do anything other than back the players would have created additional recruiting problems. You know, other programs already negative recruit like crazy against Ole Miss because of the school's complicated past and Mississippi's ugly and embarrassing history with race relations, even recent history. You know, there's a woman I work with at CBS Sports named Amy Salmonson. She produces a lot of our Inside College Basketball stuff. She produces the Emmy Award-winning show, We Need to Talk. She also does a lot of work on the SEC on CBS games each Saturday during college football season. So she travels to SEC towns. And if you ask her about her time in Oxford or about Ole Miss, the first thing she'll mention is not the Grove or the beautiful square or City Grocery. The first thing she'll mention is she'll tell you about the time she saw the KKK protesting while she was in Oxford. Keep in mind, this is a girl from New York who went to school in Miami. To her, like a KKK rally is straight out of the movies. And yet, she went to Mississippi one time and she saw it with her own eyes. That's her memory of Ole Miss. That's her image of Ole Miss. And it's precisely why Ole Miss has, over the years, wisely banned the Confederate flag, ridded itself of Colonel Reb, so on and so forth. Because like it or not, those things are symbols of racism for most. They might not be for you, but they are for most. And when Ole Miss, in football and men's basketball at the very least, is largely recruiting African-American prospects, you can't have those things connected to your school because other schools will use them against you. Similarly, if you're the AD or a coach at Ole Miss, you can't take issue with your players peacefully protesting hate groups because other schools will use it against you. So yeah, Ross and Kermit really had no choice here. The only smart thing to do was to back the players. But that doesn't mean they didn't also do the right thing, and they deserve credit for that. As a fellow Mississippian and as the husband of an Ole Miss graduate, I was proud of what the players did and how they explained it afterward. And I was also proud of how Ross and Kermit handled the entire situation. I texted both of them this weekend and told them as much. So you know where I stand on the topic. And I tweeted as much this weekend. And though I think lots of people agreed with me, clearly some did not, because this is undeniably a still very divisive topic. And the replies I got were a lot of the same tired, lazy counterpoints I've heard from years and batted down for years. And I'll walk you through two of the major ones, and in the process, I think blow them out of the water, or at least explain to you why they don't make any sense whatsoever. So if you're one of those people, or you know one of those people, gather around, listen closely, and I'll explain why the counterpoints that you hear most often when you back players, whether it's in the NFL or in this case in Oxford, Mississippi, when you back players or support them for peacefully protesting during the anthem, the counterpoints you hear most often, here's why they don't make much sense. But first, let me say this. If you're somebody, because I do think this is something that needs to be said, even though I'm on one side of this topic and have been from the jump and never budged, I think more have come around with time, but I was there from the jump. Even though I'm on one side of this topic, I can say this, and I think it's something that needs to be said. If you're somebody who simply says, look, I respect the players' right to protest, and I agree with their cause, but I simply do not think an American should do anything other than stand and put the hand over their heart during the national anthem, period. We don't really have much else to talk about. I can't argue with that. I can say I disagree with you, but I can't say that's dumb. I can't call you an idiot for feeling that way. I can disagree with you, but I can be respectful of that, because I think that's a pretty respectful place. You just say, listen, I respect the players, and I believe in their cause. I respect Colin Kaepernick, and yeah, I'm against police brutality, and I'm against racial inequality. But all that said, I just fundamentally, like at my core, think when the national anthem is being played, you should stand for it. I can respect that. If that's your point of view, perfectly reasonable point of view. I can't stress that enough. And so if you feel that way, you and I got no issue whatsoever. We can disagree on the topic, but we can reasonably disagree on the topic. But if you tweet or say one of these two other things I'm about to explain, now you're just being dumb. Either you just are, or you're trying to remain that way because you want to hold on to a certain point. And these are those two things. The first one is when people say it's disrespectful to troops and the flag and the anthem to take a knee during the anthem, because now you're protesting the flag, you're protesting the anthem, you're protesting troops. You hear that all the time. I can't stand these players protesting the national anthem. Nobody is protesting the national anthem. Literally nobody. Nobody's protesting the flag. Nobody's protesting the troops. This is where the wording is very important. People get lazy with it sometimes. The wording matters. Colin Kaepernick never protested the national anthem. He protested during the national anthem. Colin Kaepernick never protested the flag. He protested police brutality and racial inequality during the national anthem. So if you're somebody who screams, these players, people died for them, give them freedom, and they're up there protesting the national anthem. That's not what they're doing. They've explained it a million times. If you can't grasp that at this point, I say it as respectfully as I can, you're either dumb or you're just willfully staying ignorant. There's no in between. Nobody's protesting the anthem. Nobody's protesting the troops. Nobody's protesting the flag. In the NFL, they were protesting, and they've made this very clear, basically from the jump, police brutality, racial inequality, and they're protesting during the anthem. The second thing you hear all the time. Okay, I respect their right to protest, but the anthem's just not the place to do it. You know, protest somewhere else on your own time, but don't do it during the national anthem. I would argue the exact opposite is actually true. It is so crystal clear the place to do it. Because it every time ignites a conversation. We're still talking about Colin Kaepernick and the issues he brought up nearly 3 years later. How are you going to tell me the anthem's not the place to protest when the point of protesting is to bring awareness to the issues you want to bring awareness to? There is no better tool than the national anthem. For whatever reason, that's been established over the past 3 years. There's no better tool than using the national anthem to get your point across. I saw from some Ole Miss fans, I love Brian Tyree, but you know, he can protest at some other point. Not during the anthem. What's the point in protesting during the anthem? What's the point in protesting during the anthem? To bring attention and awareness to the topic you want to bring attention and awareness. And it worked amazingly well. There was Brian Tyree, a very good college basketball player on an unranked college basketball team on national television, talking about, we don't want people thinking these hate groups have anything to do with our university. Because the stories really do get twisted. People come from out of state, pro-Confederacy groups, they gather around the Ole Miss campus, march onto the Ole Miss campus, and that story, in an easy headline, gets twisted into racist groups at Ole Miss. KKK at Ole Miss. Pro-Confederate group at Ole Miss. Hate group at Ole Miss. Brian Tyree's point is, we're tired of that. So we wanted to make it crystal clear. Not only do we have nothing to do with this group of people, they're not welcome on our campus. We do not want them here. Yes, our campus has a complicated past. Our state has an ugly history. But we're doing everything we can to change that. There is no Colonel Reb anymore. There is no Confederate flag anymore. And we are not welcoming of those types of people on this campus anymore. They don't represent us. Brian Tyree doesn't have the stage to say those things, to make those points, unless he does what he did and his seven teammates with him. Take a knee during the national anthem, because what we've learned, starting with and thanks to Colin Kaepernick, that is the most effective way to protest in sports. So when you say, I don't mind them protesting, but I don't understand why I protest during the anthem. That's why. Because it gets you the attention you're seeking. Ole Miss Georgia was a nothing game. It was suddenly the biggest story in college basketball on Saturday, leading not only sports shows, but news shows. And when the athletic director and the coach back the African-American players, and they all come out together in a very public way against these hate groups that were gathering in Oxford, Mississippi, that's a good day for Oxford, Mississippi. It's a good day for Ole Miss. Bottom line, Saturday was a historic day in Oxford. Hate groups showed up, and then the basketball team stood up to them by taking a knee. It was peaceful. It was effective. And that the adults in charge stood behind them was super cool to see, especially when the adults in charge were older white men in the state of Mississippi. I tip my hat to everybody involved. Adrian Wojnarowski covers the NBA for ESPN. He's the best newsbreaker in the world. He broke the Jaren Jackson news late last week. I'm going to talk to him about that next. You're listening to the Gary Parrish Show. We're on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Another big performance from Jeremiah Martin over the weekend. Tigers got a win at Wichita State. Probably the best win of the season. We'll get into that in the next segment. Talk college basketball in general, including the controversial ending between LSU and Tennessee. College basketball coming up next. Jeff Calkins will join me a little after 5 o'clock. But right now, Adrian Wojnarowski covers the NBA for ESPN. He's the best newsbreaker in the world. He broke the Jaren Jackson news late last week. Star rookie is out for the foreseeable future with a right quad injury. I'm going to ask him about it momentarily, making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Woj, in addition to being the best NBA newsbreaker in the world, you're also a loyal Aiden and Ollie customer and Kelly's best recruiter of more customers. So thank you for that from Kelly and my family to you.
She's the best, and her stuff's the best. You're running a distant second.
Hey, I've known that for a while. I've known the dynamics of my family for a while. I'm talking to Adrian Wojnarowski here from ESPN. He's on Twitter at Woj ESPN. So you broke the news late last week. Jaren Jackson Jr. has a right quad injury, out for the foreseeable future. How serious is this?
Well, you know, those quad injuries are tricky, and certainly they're going to be cautious with Jaren Jackson. He is the future of that organization right now, and he is, you know, physically they've got to make sure that he's 100% before he's back on the court. There's obviously not a lot to play for this season, so there's no reason to rush him back. So he's going to be out for, you know, just what that term is. You know, it is a vague term, and but foreseeable future is not anytime soon, and I think they've got to, you know, that those injuries can be difficult. He's still a very young player, and they certainly don't want any setbacks with Jaren Jackson, who has shown, you know, a lot of promise this year. I think was ahead of even where they imagined he might be as a rookie. when they drafted him.
They're in an interesting situation because obviously you do not mess around with anything connected to Jaren Jackson Jr. from an injury perspective. You're not going to rush him back for all the obvious reasons. On the other hand, they are still trying to convey a pick to Boston. They would prefer to do it this year, which would suggest you want your best players on the court as often as possible. This is a less than ideal situation for them.
Yeah, it is. It is, and there's no question. And, you know, I think in the end that his health takes priority. And listen, he's been very good for them. I don't know that there's any one player who is really separating, who's worth many wins in the schedule for them. I think he's been terrific, but also I don't know in the end if it's going to make a big difference. They're losing a lot of games with him, and they're going to lose a lot without him.
That makes sense. I'm talking to Adrian Wojnarowski, who covers the NBA for ESPN. He hosts the Woj Pod that you can subscribe to via Apple Podcasts. He's on Twitter at Woj ESPN. From an organizational perspective, the trade deadline was obviously big news here. Marc Gasol gets moved out. You also break that news. Do you have a sense for how big of a role Robert Parra, the owner, is now playing in the day-to-day basketball decisions of the franchise?
It's a good question, Gary. Listen, you're not making any decision anywhere without running it past the owners. Certainly with Marc Gasol, with Mike Conley, he was a part of those conversations. Now, do I think Robert Parra is on the phone with other teams and making trades? No, I don't. Is it possible he could get on the phone with another team's owner? Yeah, that happens. But usually when they're at the end, when, you know, they're at the near a deal, sometimes the owners will get on the phone. But that's not been his reputation. He's left it to his front office, to Chris Wallace and that group. But obviously when it came to the Gasol and Conley situation, he sat down with both of them. He had come to town before trade deadline and met with them. And, you know, they were very forthright with both of them about the fact that they had made them available and they were going to look at trades. And, you know, Gasol's situation was a little different because he had the ability to become a free agent next summer. I don't want to say he had say in it, but teams also understood they were trading for him with the knowledge he could, you know, he might opt in, he might opt out. Mike Conley had 2 years left on his deal.
Talking to Adrian Wojnarowski, covers the NBA for ESPN, the host of the Woj Pod. You can subscribe to that via Apple Podcasts. He's on Twitter at Woj ESPN. You mentioned Mike Conley. He obviously made it through the trade deadline. He's still a member of the Memphis Grizzlies. I get the sense the fan base is mostly happy about that. They understand that in total rebuilding situations, you're going to need assets. Moving Mike might be the best way to get assets to some degree, but people like Mike Conley, and there's no problem with him being on the team. That said, I do think nobody here knows, but people assume that the Grizzlies will actively shop him again in the offseason, and just because he made it through the trade deadline doesn't mean he'll start on the roster with the Grizzlies next season. Do you have a sense for whether they'll actively shop him this summer?
Yeah, I think they'll pick right back up where they were, and I think they'll listen. You know, there'll be a lot more. There's always more available to a team around the draft prior to the draft than there is at the trade deadline. I think because draft picks are in play, there's more teams looking to do big deals. And also teams are going to, you know, you're going to have teams who are going to figure out what's going to happen to them in free agency. Are we going to lose a point guard in free agency? Do we need to go trade for one? Maybe it goes right into July and a team loses somebody and says, okay, let's go get Mike Conley. Or, that could all be part of the equation. So if you're Memphis, that opens up more options for you. But they're going to revisit this again. They have to and see what kind of value they can get for him. And then really be, in that full bore rebuild at that time. And I think for the rest of the regular season, I think the hope was it was still good to have Mike Conley around, especially for Jaren Jackson. But obviously with Jackson out now, you know, obviously that's less of a priority.
The Lakers are in town, and right now outside of the playoff picture in the Western Conference. I don't know if nervous is the right word, but how concerned is that organization that, you know, these games are ticking off. They just lost in New Orleans. They really might not make the Western Conference playoffs. In fact, I don't think there's any computer projection out there right now that has them projected to make the Western Conference playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, outside of the league adding a ninth team in the West to the playoff picture to get the Lakers in, they might have to add 10 teams. They might have to add two teams this year. Outside of an edict coming from Adam Silver, yeah, they're probably not going to. You're right. You look at the computer projections, and they're under 10%, right? And so, I think the hope has been for them that LeBron would just get on one of those runs where he just carries them. But that might not be enough, and that's not enough in the West. There's a lot of great players carrying a lot of really good teams, and he hasn't shown yet that he can do that with this team. And I think the trade deadline took a lot out of that team. I think it took a lot of their they had not played consistent good basketball. They didn't play particularly well when LeBron was out injured. They had a stretch before he went out where they were playing pretty well. But there was certainly a fracture in that locker room, and that came with the Anthony Davis trade talks. And I'm not sure the team ever recovers from that, but I also think it's an excuse to, in some levels, like I thought they were good enough to be a playoff team. But they certainly weren't good enough to survive a month without LeBron James, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, before the trade deadline, he misses 18 games, which is like, you know, at that point, a third of the season. And that obviously took a toll. And I'm with you. I think all of the, you know, if there's reports out there that LeBron's camp would prefer a different coach than Luke Walton, if there's reports out there that LeBron's willing to trade basically the entire roster for Anthony Davis, like, these are all humans. There's no way that doesn't take a toll on your locker room.
Yeah, especially at that age. And I know people will say, hey, you're professional, play with it, deal with it. But these are all young players who've never been told before they're not good enough or that somebody didn't want them. And it's jarring at that age, especially. It just is. And players, as they get, you know, more seasoned in the league, kind of grow to understand that it's part of the business. But at that age, especially when you're drafted to the Lakers and it all looks like, you know, sunshine and palm trees and Staples Center and all the things that come with playing L.A., LeBron comes in, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're spending 10 days trying to move every one of you out of there. It takes a toll, and it did on that team. That's, like you said, Gary, it's human nature.
I'm talking to Adrian Wojnarowski, covers the NBA for ESPN. He's the host of the Woj Pod. You can subscribe to that, and you should, via Apple Podcasts. He's on Twitter, @WojESPN. Are the Lakers still confident they're going to be able to get Anthony Davis? Or were they ever confident?
Well, I don't know how confident they were that they would. I don't think they were ever terribly confident they'd be able to get him in a trade, because I think they imagined it might play out the way it did, which was New Orleans didn't want to deal with him the way San Antonio really didn't want to, the way Indiana didn't, although they didn't make a very good offer to Indiana for Paul George 2 years ago. But they have to hope that he's going to keep to his word, and when he's a free agent in 2020, that he'll be ready to sign with them. If they can't find a way to make a deal here in the off season, but you know, if he's traded elsewhere and offered, he'll obviously be offered an extension if he's traded elsewhere. You know, they need for him to turn that extension down and walk in 2020. But that also means they have to keep their cap space open another year. And LeBron's not getting younger, and LeBron. So you're looking at what, 35 years old in 2020
It would be his age 36 season. He would turn 36 in December of that season. And I don't know why. I imagine other people are going to put it in Anthony Davis's head. You really want to go spend part of your prime playing with a 36-year-old, even though LeBron is superhuman. Very few 36-year-olds and people who are older have ever operated at the highest level of the NBA.
Right, and then I think his hope would be, or the thinking would be, well, I'm a star player with the Lakers, and we'll get others. And if it's not LeBron, or if LeBron heads into either a different role, or, you know, by the time your deal's up, if he's retired, which I don't know when he's going to retire. I imagine him playing like Tom Brady at 40. I mean, I do. I think we all do, right? Like, he'll still be a pretty good player in the NBA, that he'll be able to keep playing. But if you're Anthony Davis, you hope, if you do this, that it's the Lakers, and players are going to want to come there. They have cap space. You'll be able to help convince guys to come there. But this summer, the Lakers, if they're going to do that, well, you know, do they sign a guy, you know, guys on one-year deals again? So you have cap space in 2020. You just go out and, you know, sign a guy to a one-year big number, you know, big money contract, and and then get back at free agency in 2020. But that wasn't really the plan. I think they had always thought by this summer they'd be able to go get Kawhi Leonard or Kevin Durant or Klay Thompson, and that had been the hope that, well, what really was the hope, Gary, was that they would sign one of those players in free agency with the cap space they have, and then they would use all those young players and draft picks to trade for an Anthony Davis or another established player, and then that way they'd have their three stars. But right now it's hard to see them as a front runner with any of the big free agents that are out there. They're not, I won't say that they're out of it, but there's not one that the Lakers go to bed at night and think, hey, we know we've got that guy. There isn't one of the big ones that they feel that way about.
I'm wrapping up here with Adrian Wojnarowski, who covers the NBA for ESPN, host of the Woj Pod. You can subscribe via Apple Podcasts. He's on Twitter at WojESPN. Last thing before I let you go, Zion Williamson has become a big basketball story, not just a college basketball story, because he is considered the likely number one pick of the 2019 NBA draft. That is but based largely on the opinions of people like me. I don't run an NBA team. You talk to people who do literally every day. Is it a consensus in NBA circles that it does not matter what franchise gets the number one pick, that pick will be used on Zion Williamson?
Yes, and I haven't heard anything contrary to that. That certainly changed, because there were questions going into the season, and this gets back to what his year at Duke and what his year in college basketball has meant to him. It's been a great deal, because R.J. Barrett, in a lot of people's minds, was, I would say, a consensus number one, but it was, you thought somebody else might jump in there, and then it happened when Zion did, because he's shown so much more to his game at Duke. He was injured. He missed some stuff his senior year, and I think he's shown a more complete game. He's shown an ability to do more than just be a dunker, and some of the things people saw him as, more of a highlight reel guy. You've seen some all-around abilities. People see him as a small ball center in the NBA, if you ask Mike Schmitz, our draft analyst. And so I do think he's the number one pick, and I do think, though, that Duke in college basketball not only elevated him to sort of an absolute consensus of that, but in terms of his marketing and his endorsement opportunities, I think they've grown exponentially with this year in college basketball. And, you know, he may get a record shoe deal for a rookie. And that wasn't necessarily going to be there for him if he had gone, let's say he could have gone out of high school. That might not have been the case. So in that case, I think Duke in college basketball has been good for him. And it may have been the case if he went anywhere. It wouldn't have had to have been Duke. He could have maybe gone to Kentucky and the same thing would be happening, or Carolina, or wherever.
That is Adrian Wojnarowski, who covers the NBA for ESPN. If you're not subscribed to the Woj Pod, go do it. You can do that at Apple Podcasts. Follow him on Twitter. I'm sure you probably already are. At WojESPN, at WojESPN. Great stuff, buddy. I can't wait to see you. And we'll do that real soon.
Sounds good. Great. Thanks for having me on, Gary.
All right. That's Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN. Interesting about Zion there being a small ball center in the NBA. Like, he's only 6'7". And so, like, 6'7 center in the NBA is not a real thing.
Right.
It's really not even a real thing in high major college basketball. But he's so strong that he gets pushed around by nobody. And because of the way he can leave the court, jump, you're not just going to be able to shoot over him if you're 6'11, 7'1". Like, he can match you hand for hand up there, even if he can't look you in the eye. And so I don't know that he'll spend most of his minutes playing center, but I think he certainly can. If you want to play small, he can guard opposing centers, and then obviously he can pull them away from the basket and create all sorts of problems. Just a matchup nightmare, obviously, in college basketball. People think also in the NBA. You heard it from Woj. It's not just all the people who do mock drafts who think Zion is going to be number one in the 2019 NBA draft. The people who run the franchises, who are actually going to make this pick, it's pretty much a consensus at this point. Zion Williamson will go one in the 2019 NBA draft, and then after that, we can start debating. We come back. Jeremiah Martin had another monster performance this weekend at Wichita State. Penny Hardaway says he's on one of the best runs he's ever seen any Memphis basketball player have, himself included. We'll get into that and the controversy surrounding the LSU-Tennessee game from this past weekend. Talking college basketball next.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
It feels so good, it should cost. Brought an alligator, I ain't talking Lacoste. Made me say, Like a mix of Master P and Rick Ross. She seen it made me always feel like a boss. She said I'm in the
Cooper
wrong
Cooper Systems over in the Mount Moriah Office Park on the web, coopersystems.com. That phone number is 360-9679, 360-9679. You need a new computer, refurbished computer, custom-built computer, anything computer-related, dial that number. Talk to Lee and Lauren Cooper. Tell them what it is you're going to be doing with a computer. I mean, you don't have to get super-duper specific, but let them know. Like, are you going to be making music videos, or are you just going to be playing around on Facebook? Because if you're making music videos or doing complex things, you probably do need to spend real money on a computer that is equipped to do those things. But if you're just going to be stalking your ex on Facebook, watching YouTube videos, you don't need to go spend $1,000 on a computer. You can get one of those for a couple hundred, just a few hundred bucks. That way, it'll be equipped to do everything you need it to do, but it won't do any of the stuff you don't need it to do because you don't need it to do those things. So why would you pay for it? If you go to the big box stores, you're going to. You're going to buy a new computer that's got all sorts of programs on it. You don't even know that they exist. You don't know what to do with them. Why would you do that? Makes no sense. Get a computer that's perfectly suited for you. It's going to be better priced for you. You can do that at Cooper Systems on the web, coopersystems.com. Jeff Calkins is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock. He was at Wichita State for the Tigers' win this weekend. Talk to him about that. First, I got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four stories presented by the Bluff Restaurant and Bar. Four notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's four notable stories at 4:44. Story number one.
Big win for the Tigers this weekend, 88-85 at Wichita State. It's the first time this season they had beaten a top 250 KenPom team on the road. Wichita State currently 105th at KenPom. So it's a top 125. It's a win over a top 125 KenPom team on the road. And it's a game, simply put, that they would not have won a month ago. You know, when they were going in through that stretch where they were going down by 20 points on the road, right, every time they played a quality opponent, whether it was, you know, at Temple or at Tulsa or at South Florida when they were famously down by a bazillion, by an embarrassing margin, having just 1 point so deep into the game, they had no chance in a game like this, particularly when Wichita State takes a lead in the second half. But they rallied. They stayed together. They continued to play. They didn't fold. Jeremiah Martin was spectacular, and they get out of there with an 88-85 victory. So now they're 17-11 overall, 9-6 in the American Athletic Conference, 4-1 in their past four games, with the lone loss in that stretch being a game at Central Florida that they had a chance to win, that they were leading in the second half. And Central Florida is in most people's projected NCAA tournament brackets right now, up to 74th at KenPom, 60th in the net rankings. And no, because I had optimistic buddies ask me. So the Tigers, yeah, in the at-large, they're not anywhere close to the at-large conversation right now. They're 0-8 in quadrant one opportunities, 3-2 in quadrant two opportunities. No. So they are 3-10 in quadrant one / quadrant two opportunities. That's nowhere near good enough, but don't ever forget, this is a program that finished 161st at KenPom last season, that started this season ranked 107th, and now it's up to 74th. And also playing its best basketball of the season, the type of basketball where you can reasonably say when that AAC tournament gets here that Memphis is going to have a decent chance to win it. Because then, as I've said a bazillion times, nobody, not even Houston, which is ranked in the top 10, is going to be a significant favorite over Memphis inside FedEx Forum. So when you've got a home court advantage that is significant and somebody playing at the level Jeremiah Martin is playing, you're going to have a puncher's chance, if not in something better than a puncher's chance, as long as we're being honest. On Jeremiah, I mean, just unbelievable.
Yeah.
37 more points this past weekend. He is now averaging 30.7 points per game in the Tigers' past seven games, and he's doing it efficiently. It's not one of these things where he's getting good point per game totals without context. Like, yeah, 30 points on 23 shots. That's not what he's doing. He's getting this done in an efficient way, shooting really, really good percentages both from the field and from the three-point line. And Penny Hardaway said it's the best seven-game stretch he can ever remember. He believes a Memphis player's ever had. I'm not a historian, so I can't speak to that. But I can't imagine that there are many better than this. And some of it, like we talked about last week, is tempo-induced. They play at such a fast tempo that there's more shots available, which means there's more points available. But whatever. I mean, you go get 37 in a 40-minute college basketball game on the road against a not great but quality team with a possible Hall of Fame coach and in front of a sold-out building, man, you're doing something. And so Jeremiah Martin is – I don't know if his college career is going to culminate with a trip to the NCAA tournament. We will see. I hope so, but I'm not sure. But his college basketball career is peaking, and it is peaking at a level that we have – possibly never seen at the University of Memphis. So shouts to him. Yeah. and keep going, because he's really got that fan base fired up in a real way right now, looking forward not only to the next game but to the postseason and the possibilities that come with that.
Story number two.
Big win over the weekend for LSU down in Baton Rouge against a Tennessee team that was ranked fifth in the country at the time. It was announced just before tip-off that Tremont Waters, LSU's fabulous point guard, would not be available. And at that point, honestly, I was like, okay, well, Tennessee just caught a break. I mean, LSU's not going to beat Tennessee without Tremont Waters. I mean, it really went from LSU was a favorite in the game, and then Tennessee, like, it became a favorite, I believe, once the Tremont Waters, it definitely moved the point spread once Tremont Waters was ruled out of the game. And so they do not have Waters, who's their best player.
Yeah.
Naz Reid goes 0-9 from
the
field.
Hit a bucket to save his life.
0-9 from the field. No Tremont Waters. And somehow LSU still wins 82-80. And it had a bit of a controversial ending because it went to overtime. And then there's a foul called with less than a second left away from the basket on Grant Williams when he was reaching for a ball that Javonte Smart had. It's a less than ideal way to end a game, because when that foul is called, you are effectively ending the game as an official. Whereas the only way that game could end in the first overtime would be with a whistle, because either Grant Williams gets the ball and there's not enough time to get a shot up, or Javonte Smart hurls it toward the basket 70 feet away and he misses and we're going to double overtime. There was no way without a whistle that game was ending in one overtime. But the foul is called. Javonte Smart goes to the free throw line and knocks down two free throws.
It was an inexplicable foul, though. I mean, it was a foul.
Undeniably a foul. Dumb by Grant Williams, except it's much easier to call it dumb with the benefit of hindsight than it is in the moment, because your basketball instincts are to try to get the ball.
Right.
That's what people do. But you have to know, and listen, he knows it now.
Yeah.
There's less than a second left. It doesn't matter if I get the ball. If I get this ball, if I actually accomplish what it is I'm trying to do right now, it doesn't matter. The game, the overtime period, the clock's expired. And if I just stay out of the way, it also doesn't matter, because Javonte Smart can't make a shot from 70 feet. We're going to a second overtime.
Yeah.
But like, you can't process all of that in real time, I guess, would be the explanation. So he commits the foul, and then Javonte Smart knocks down a couple of free throws. And though Tennessee actually did have a shot at the buzzer, which was crazy, it was not even close, and so LSU wins 82-80. Two controversies here. We'll start with the first one that happened like on the court. Should the official have made the call? That's the thing. I got asked yesterday. I was on Sirius XM Radio, and they said, should the official have made the call? And the simple answer is yes, because it's a foul. You know, one of the things I think, now let me say this. It sucks that you have to make that call, because you are effectively ending the game with a whistle. Unless you think Javonte Smart's going to go the other end and miss two free throws, and that just was not going to happen. So it sucks, because you know when you blow the whistle, I'm ending this game. The game's over. Yeah. I just ended it.
Yeah.
Except really Grant Williams ended it, because it was a foul. But you have to understand, the alternative to calling a foul is not calling a foul. And yeah, Rick Barnes is upset that you called the foul. Will Wade might murder you if you don't.
Yes.
Plus, you got 12,000 LSU fans or whatever that building holds. They might murder you if you don't. And beyond all that, the thing I think sometimes the let the players decide the game crowd, or the swallow your whistle crowd, what they I think sometimes forget is that these officials are evaluated every second of every game by their boss. If he doesn't make that call, that is something his boss is going to ask him about. If the official, it will affect his future assignments. It could be the thing that keeps him from going and working in a Final Four. And so the officials, this is why I always sort of roll my eyes when fans think, well, these officials are biased, or these officials are cheating. These officials are working under an incredible microscope, not just with both coaches watching them and fans watching in the arena, people watching on TV, with their bosses. Every second of every game, they are evaluated on it. You missed a call here. You made a call here, but that was wrong. You missed another one here. And ultimately, it could affect their job security. If you do a poor job often enough, as is the case in any other business, a superior at some point will say, you're not good enough at this job for me to continue letting you do this job. So these officials have real career incentive to get the call right. And the official here got the call right. So it was a controversial ending, but I don't know what the alternative would have been. Not blowing the whistle would have been more controversial because that would have been a missed call that allowed Tennessee LSU to go to a second overtime that should not have existed. The second controversy is that the official who made the call, Anthony Jordan, subsequent to the game, there is a social media picture circulating where he's holding up an LSU shirt and, you know, it's Go Tigers, and he looks like an LSU fan, right?
Right.
And so the guy who makes the call at the end of the Tennessee LSU game that effectively sends Javonte Smart to the free throw line to complete a victory over Tennessee appears to be an LSU fan. He's from the state of Louisiana. He's holding up an LSU shirt. He's talking about Go Tigers. Bad look.
Bad.
Bad look. But it doesn't mean he got the call wrong.
Right.
You know, like, I think this would be more of a problem for the SEC if it would have not been a foul, but he called a foul, and now, hold up, he's an LSU fan, and he blew that whistle, and that whistle shouldn't have been blown. Now we got a real problem. Mm-hmm. But don't ever forget, like, he made the right call.
Yep.
So, you know, he might be an LSU fan, but he didn't mess up the end of the game to benefit LSU. He got the call right. That said, I don't think he can ever work in an LSU game again.
No.
Because in this and any other thing where people are working publicly in positions of influence and referees can clearly influence the outcomes of high-stakes games, the perception is something you can't have, even if it doesn't match with the reality. This guy, for the rest of his life, to the extent any basketball fans know his name, know that he's the guy on Instagram or wherever else holding up LSU stuff, talking about Go Tigers. So even though he got this call right, you put him on another LSU game sometime, every call that he doesn't get right, even if it's for innocent reasons, like he didn't get the call right just because it's a hard job and referees don't get calls right all the time, with him it'll be way bigger. Oh, he's cheating for LSU. Oh, he didn't call that foul on Tremont Waters because he likes LSU. Oh, he should give Will Wade a tech, but he won't because he loves LSU. Go Tigers. You just can't have that if you're the SEC. And so I'll be shocked if he ever works another LSU game. Doesn't mean he did anything wrong in this weekend's game, but you can't risk him doing something wrong in another LSU game because if he does, it's going to be a massive story. So what I do if I'm running the SEC, I pull him off all LSU games for this season and every other season going forward, because that picture never goes away. And I send a memo to every one of my officials, and I say, "Listen, we can't deal
put
with
the gear away.
We can't deal with like where you grew up,
right,
where you went to college, where your wife went to college, where your kids are going to college. It's too much.
Right.
Everybody's going to be aligned somewhere with something, but it cannot be public in any way. So if you are an Alabama graduate and you've got an Alabama license plate frame that says, you know, Alabama graduate, take that off your car.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a Facebook post from 12 years ago of you wearing a Kentucky shirt, take that off.
Mm-hmm.
No evidence whatsoever that you are affiliated with or a fan of any SEC school, because fans, right or wrong, fair or unfair, they'll use it against
you.
I'd send that memo out already today, maybe yesterday, and try to eliminate these problems going forward, because, again, the outcome of the game, it went the way it was supposed to go. But you've got all these other topics of conversation connected to it because of a social media post that probably just shouldn't have been there.
Story number three.
Gonzaga is the new number one team in the AP poll earlier today. And predictably, There's backlash because they don't play nobody between January, February.
You're still getting
and
a lot of that.
Yeah, you would think. I thought at least that after Gonzaga went to the national championship game of 2 years ago, that it'd be over. Like, you know, we should be smart enough to know at this point, and some of us are, that great basketball teams can come from anywhere.
Right.
You know, they don't have to be built in the ACC. I do think great football teams largely have to be built in the power conferences for a variety of reasons, but great basketball teams can be from anywhere. They can be from Conference USA if John Calipari's coaching one of them. They can be from the West Coast Conference if Mark Few's coaching one of them. They can be from the Mountain West Conference. Way back when UNLV,
right, long time
and that
ago.
Might have predated
sure.
the Mountain West. That was another league, I think, but yeah. whatever it was.
The Big West or the Mountain West, whatever.
It came out of the outside of the traditional power
sure.
structure of
That's
the
right.
sport. UMass, you know, when John was there, it came out of the Atlantic 10,
mm-hmm.
undeniable college basketball monster. We know now that great college basketball teams can come from anywhere. And I thought that once Gonzaga went to the Final Four, played for the national championship, was like 3 minutes away from winning it,
mm-hmm.
That we'd be done with this stuff. But we're just clearly not. So earlier today, I put together some bullet points at the top of the top 25 and one, because Gonzaga's been number one there for like, you know, since last Sunday. AP poll and coaches poll catch up with me today.
Yeah, they're finally back to
but,
you.
But I've been with them since last weekend. And so here's the bullet points on Gonzaga. They're 27-2 with 11 wins over top 100 KenPom teams, among them a neutral court victory over the team that's favored to win the national championship, Mike Krzyzewski's mm-hmm. Duke Blue Devils, led by Zion Williams. They only have two losses. Mm-hmm. The losses are on the road to a North Carolina team that is in the top 10,
mm-hmm.
and on a neutral court in the final minute against a Tennessee team that spent much of this season ranked number one in the country, is still in the top 10. No bad losses. No losses to teams ranked outside of the top 10 in today's AP poll. No losses at home. Undefeated at home. Number one in the NCAA's net ranking. Their adjusted efficiency margin is 34.68. And I know that that probably means nothing to you without context. So here's the context.
Mm-hmm.
It's the second best in the country. And even more impressively, it's 2.63 points higher than the adjusted efficiency margin of 32.05
mm-hmm.
that they had two seasons ago when they played for the national championship. So here's what I'm telling you. There is smart math stuff that says this team is actually better than the team we've already watched play for a national
right.
championship. This team's better than that team. So if that team was good enough to play for the national championship, why isn't this game good enough to be ranked number one in the country? 27-2, 11 wins over top 100 KenPom teams, no losses to teams ranked outside of the top 10, and an adjusted efficiency margin that's better than the team they had 2 years ago when they played for the national title. On an 18-game winning streak right now, and yeah, it's against West Coast Conference competition, so it's not like playing in the ACC and the Big Ten, but they're beating the crap out of everybody. All 18 wins by double digits, they've come by an average of 31.3 points per game. They've got the nation's best offensive efficiency rating. They've got the nation's best two-point field goal percentage. They've got the nation's best effective field goal percentage. And yes, before you ask, this is all adjusted to take into account the competition. Their rotation, because you want to question them from an individual mm-hmm. personnel perspective, their rotation features a projected lottery pick, Rui Hachimura. They've got a junior in Brandon Clark, who's got the second-best player efficiency rating in the entire country, second only to Zion Williamson. The all-time assist leader at Gonzaga, it's not John Stockton. It's Josh Perkins, who is the starting point guard right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they got five players shooting at least 38% from three-point range.
They're loaded.
Five
yeah.
in their rotation shooting at least 38% from three-point range. How could you listen to everything I just said and say that that team isn't at least in the conversation for best team in the country? If you want to argue, well, I just think Duke, when healthy, is better, even though we watched Duke healthy lose to Gonzaga. Fine.
Right.
You know what? I might think that, too. But it's not crazy to have Gonzaga number one. There's the grouping formula that the NCAA now uses, the net, identifies Gonzaga as the best team in the country. KenPom identifies them in the top two. Sagarin, top two. And the resume is awesome. And the adjusted efficiency margin is awesome. So this is one of undeniably the best teams in the country and a team that is very much deserving of its number one ranking.
Story number four.
Massive game tonight in Lawrence, Kansas. It's Kansas State against Kansas. inside Allen Fieldhouse. It's going to be 8 o'clock Central tip. You can watch it on ESPN. Kansas is a 4.5-point favorite, and the reason that it is big is because, famously, Kansas has a 14-year streak of at least sharing the Big 12 regular season title. And if Kansas does not win tonight, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Not technically, but for all intents and purposes, it's over. Here's why. Kansas State's got a 2-game lead on Kansas right now. So if Kansas State wins tonight, they'd have a 3-game lead on Kansas with just 3 regular season games to go. That would mean that going forward, any Kansas loss or Kansas State win, boom, it's done. Kansas would not be able to at least share the Big 12 title. And 2 of Kansas State's final 3 games are home games against Baylor and Oklahoma. Both are sub-30 KenPom teams, and Kansas State hasn't lost at home all season to a sub-30 KenPom team, which means it's unlikely that they would do that twice in an 8-day span to close the season. So if Kansas State does not win tonight, I mean, if Kansas does not win tonight, it is game, set, match on that streak of Big 12 titles. So massive game for Dedrick Lawson and KJ Lawson and obviously Bill Self. And if they are to lose tonight and it's basically done, you'll hear a lot of people trying to explain why this happened. Let me make it very simple for you. Here's why. They lost 3 rotation players that they thought they were going to have. LaJarrell Vick's no longer with the team. Yudoka Azubuike, the starting center, suffered a season-ending hand injury, and Silvio D'Souza is serving a suspension from the NCAA. They lost 2 starters and 3 of their best 6 or 7 players throughout this season, one way or another, and that takes a toll on just about anybody. It has taken a toll on the Kansas Jayhawks, who are coming off of a 29-point loss at Texas Tech. Again, tip-off tonight, 8 o'clock. You can watch it on ESPN. Jeff Calkins is up next.
Now, back to the Gary Parish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN with Jeff Calkins on today's show, presented by the Blue Monkey.
Our king and savior LeBron James is in town. Lakers at FedEx Forum tonight against the Grizzlies. Perhaps you're going to have a pregame drink. If so, maybe you like vodka. If so, make it New Amsterdam Vodka. It is an 80-proof vodka made from the finest quality grains. 5 times distilled for unparalleled smoothness. Filtered 3 times to create a soft finish. How smooth is it, Mr. Big Chest?
It's so smooth you can drink it straight.
So smooth you can drink it straight. Fastest growing brand of vodka in the United States of America. And thanks to the support of you guys, we turned Memphis into the number one market per capita in the country for New Amsterdam vodka. Very proud of that. They got flavored vodkas as well. Grapefruit is the newest, but they also have apple, peach, orange, mango, pineapple, red berry, coconut, lemon, raspberry. If you're into flavored vodkas, New Amsterdam's got you covered. And yes, it really is what I get when I'm in the liquor store, and the reason's simple. It's quality vodka that's reasonably priced. I could spend more on vodka. There's more expensive bottles of vodka. I could spend more on vodka if I wanted to. Why would I do that? My wife tells me I already spent enough.
Enough.
I don't need to spend anymore. So I get New Amsterdam vodka. Reasonably priced vodka. Quality vodka. Pour your soul out on the web, newamsterdamspirits.com. newamsterdamspirits.com. Jeff Calkins is your award-winning columnist, Daily Memphian, host of the Jeff Calkins Show, weekdays from 9 to 11. He joins me right now. Jeff Calkins, how are you?
Good, Gary.
So I know earlier this afternoon you met with Penny Hardaway in advance of tomorrow night's game against Temple inside FedEx Forum. The most interesting thing Penny Hardaway said was,
he's going to keep giving the ball to Jeremiah Martin.
That's smart. You tell me. They were worried about this guy being a first-time college head coach? They really had questions about this guy being a first-year college head coach. Like, is Penny Hardaway going to be able to coach, you know, at the collegiate level? He's smart enough to know, keep giving the ball to Jeremiah Martin. And you know what? Like, I'm goofing around a little bit, except that, and I've had long conversations with coaches about this. Like, sometimes just, like, get out of the way.
Right.
You know, sometimes be smart enough. If you've got somebody who's special, let them be special. That was really the idea behind John Calipari's dribble drive offense way back when. If you would ask John about it, like, hey, do you want to, are you great playing one-on-one? Can you go get buckets? Okay, then we're going to put you in a position to go get buckets. And they're basically just weaving, trying to drive downhill, just beat your man. When Duke didn't have its point guard earlier this season, Trey Jones against Virginia in the first game at Cameron Indoor, that's all they did is spread the floor and let R.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson take turns playing one-on-one basketball. That's Mike Krzyzewski, the greatest college coach of all time, and he says afterwards, all we wanted was to get RJ and Zion to play one-on-one basketball against Virginia because we feel like they're the 2 most talented players in the country. Like, this stuff doesn't have to be complicated. When you have a guy like Jeremiah Martin, just let him keep being awesome.
Yeah, and I will say, like, it is interesting. I mean, Greg Marshall is one of the smartest coaches in the conference, and I've said this a million times.
Country.
There's not, yeah, in the country. Yeah, not the country. There's nothing about Penny that, I mean, they could have won or lost, but it wasn't a coaching mismatch one way or another. It was, they might not, maybe Jeremiah wouldn't have gone 14-14 from the line or whatever. Like, but it was not a coaching mismatch either way. They executed well down the stretch. And if, honestly, the truth of the matter is that if you the final few minutes, it was Jeremiah had a bunch of foul shots, but he wasn't hitting a bunch of shots, and they ran plays for other people, and it was there was nothing about that. That was a really, and I saw you tweeting about it. What was the game you said, for those of you watching blah blah blah, you might want to flip over to Wichita State. Remember, because
yeah.
It is.
You know, most of the country probably watching Kansas, Texas Tech. It's two top 20 teams,
right.
Big 12, and it was a blowout basically from start to finish. And I'm not the guy who talks about, you know, tries to tell a national audience all the time, the Tigers are on, you got to watch them. But it was a fun game. I mean, they're going back and forth, big shot after big shot.
Wichita State was hitting big shots.
Yeah, it was.
Big shots.
It was a fun
falling
game.
Down threes, and like one after another. Yeah, it was. There was no question. It was a great atmosphere. Fun game. Obviously, it's not the best Wichita State team, but it's a team that's played very well lately, and they were up to the task. And we, it's just unbelievable to see Jeremiah. You think, okay, well, that was Tulane. He's not going to do this again, and yet he does it again. It's unbelievable. That may have been his most impressive performance yet.
Because it's on the road in front of a packed arena against a possible Hall of Fame coach and a team that's not great. But it's still a top 110 KenPom team, and Memphis famously had not beaten a top 250 KenPom team on the road all season. So it was Jeremiah continuing to operate really at one of the highest levels of the sport. I don't know. I mean, R.J. Barrett's coming off a big game, you know, and obviously R.J.'s I say this with all due respect, but a better player, a better prospect. He's probably the second best player in the country next to his teammate Zion Williamson. But if the question is who is playing better than Jeremiah Martin on over a seven-game stretch, you know, I don't know that there's an answer to that question. Like, he really might be the dude.
I wonder if you just literally add points.
Right.
The last seven games, he's averaged more than 30 points.
Yeah.
Has anyone else scored 210 points over their last seven games?
I don't
and
know.
I would wager not. But I don't know. Like, is anyone else averaging 30 points a game for an extended stretch? Who would it be? Like a Zion? Zion's a much better player. I understand that. But has Zion ever had a stretch of seven games where he averaged 30 points a game?
No. But I'm actually looking this up in real time. Chris Clemens plays at Campbell. He's leading the nation in scoring, and he just became the ninth Division I player in history to score 3,000 points in a career. Here's his past seven games. 41, 27, 28, 48, 32, 23, 39. So, like,
yeah, that's more.
That's more. I didn't
because he had a because Jeremiah had a 112 in there,
right?
That's certainly more. It's probably more anyway. Like, even if that's more, but it would have been close.
Yeah,
that's basically what Jeremiah's been doing, except he had a 12.
Right. Yeah, but like, okay, so the leading scorer in the country is scoring at a higher rate.
Who's he with again?
Chris Clemens. He's a Campbell Fighting Camel. He's a Fighting Camel.
The Fighting Camels.
He plays for the Fighting Camels.
I bet they love Wednesdays.
Right.
Hey,
thank you.
Yeah, so yeah. he's scoring at a higher rate than Jeremiah Martin over the past seven games, but I think it's possible nobody else is.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's really been something else to watch. It's just so much fun. You just can't believe it. I mean, you're sort of, I'm just exclaiming now. I'm reduced to just blubbering about it. And it's fun, and it's been meaningful. Obviously, I don't think there's much they can do to get in. I don't think anything they can do to get in at large at this point. But the other thing is that they have figured out kind of, like, to me, you can count on Kareem Brewton now, and you can count on, to varying degrees, but I mean, you can count on Kareem. I think they're tough guys. I think Rainier Thornton and Kareem Brewton are tough guys, and you can count on them. And then you can count on Jeremiah, and then, you know, Kevin's a mystery. You wish you could count on him a little more. And then the freshman. And Tyler hit a big shot. He hit a big shot. And, But I mean, you got basically, you know, pretty much every game you can count on those three guys, and that's sort of, they've figured some things out about themselves, and I think that's important going into this stretch. Obviously, they got two games this week against teams that have beaten them, and then they'll be heading into the tournament.
To your point about the at-large candidacy, it's just even if they do something like win every remaining game except for the Cincinnati game, it just doesn't get them there. Right now Clemson is considered on the wrong side of the bubble, like first four out or first eight out, but in that conversation. And Clemson is 4-11 against quadrant one and quadrant two. In quadrant one, quadrant two opportunities.
Clemson's like 0-8 in quadrant one.
No quadrant one wins, and then they're 3-10 in quadrant one / quadrant two opportunities, where again Clemson is 4-11. So Clemson's got more wins, maybe one more loss, I guess. But Clemson also has opportunities coming up because they play in the AC to get those types of wins. Memphis, they're just not going to be there for Memphis. Even if they finish this season as well as you could reasonably hope, they're probably, if they're playing on that Saturday in the AAC tournament title game, they're probably still going to have to win that to get in the NCAA tournament.
Right. I mean, I think that's – but to me, the fun here is not we sort of thought this season would be a wash, right, and would be this kind of a season. And honestly, because of what Jeremiah is doing, apart from remembering this as Penny's first season someday, we will remember this as the Jeremiah season, like the year that Jeremiah went nuts. And it's independently just fun. Like, whatever you think about wherever, if they're going to go to the tournament or not, people were tweeting out pictures from the Kiss concert Saturday night at FedEx Forum, where before the concert started, they were gathered around a TV at FedEx Forum watching the Memphis Wichita State game. And that's different. It's just different. It's been fun independently of anything else. That was a wildly entertaining game, and so just for its own sake, it was a blast, and it has been a blast watching him do what he's done.
And so the projections now are that they're going to go 2-1 in these last three games. They should beat Temple and Tulsa at home, and then almost certainly lose at Cincinnati, and that would put them at 19-12 overall, 11-7 in the ACC going into the AAC going into the AAC tournament. And no, that's not going to get them in the at-large conversation, but it will be. They're 4-1 past five games, lone loss at Central Florida. They could reasonably end up 6-2 in their final eight games of the regular season, with the lone losses being at Central Florida and at Cincinnati. Even if that doesn't get them to the bubble, it is evidence that they got better as this season went on, that they've gotten better over the past month. Listen, you've been to all of these road games. I guess I'd say this. You tell me if I'm wrong. There's no way they win that Wichita State game a month ago, but they won But they won it this past weekend.
There's no possible way they win that game. In fact, I mean, it was the way it started. I think it didn't look like there was any way they were going to win it. And they still have that issue, and that the they get off to a slow start, and then it's interesting because then they put in Isaiah Maurice, who has not been good, and the freshman who've not been great. So they don't rescue you. So all of a sudden you're down 16. But there is absolutely no way they win that game. Forget it. So forget that. Like, they've climbed back into games before. They did against Temple. They did against USF. They've climbed back into the games, and they climbed back into this game. But then with 4 minutes left, they had a 13-point lead in the second half. So with 4 minutes left, Wichita State comes back, ties it on a three, and you're like, okay, that's it. Place is just going bananas. And they had the wherewithal to execute down the stretch and do what it took to win. And that's what they could not have done earlier this year. In fact, the play that I referenced in my column today, the Memphian, was immediately upon tying the game, you could barely hear the crowd explode before Jeremiah was flying down the court. And Rainier Thornton was asking for the alley-oop. And he said, no, I didn't want to risk that. I just wanted to get it to him cleanly for the dunk. So within 2 seconds of them tying it up, it felt like Memphis was back ahead by two. And it was just a smart play by Jeremiah. He sort of anticipated. He anticipated the reaction of the crowd. He anticipated all of it. And then he also didn't try to make the let's make the flashy alley-oop. He said, I'm going to get it to him cleanly. He's going to dunk the ball. And they never, it was never tied again. And that's the kind of sort of just smart play in the clutch that I don't know this team, that I know this team would not have made earlier in the season.
Talking to Jeff Calkins here on 92.9 FM ESPN, University of Memphis plays Temple tomorrow night inside FedEx Forum. You'll be courtside for that, and I imagine you'll be courtside tonight because our King and Savior, LeBron James, and the Lakers will be at FedEx Forum.
And King and Savior was reiterated today that Penny was his favorite player, or at least one of his favorite players growing up. We did ask Penny about that, and Penny obviously he's sort of flattered by that. I mean, he was joking about it. He said, "You're surprised," but what he said was he likes it because everyone wants to be like, well, it's Mike, and he said it was Kobe or it was Mike or whatever. And he appreciates that LeBron appreciated his game, and they've obviously become closer over the years. And remember when Penny was going to do that basketball facility out east at one point? LeBron flew in for the groundbreaking of that. It never happened, but so they obviously have a relationship, and it is sort of amazing though to think that we have LeBron in town. And last time he came to town, it was like the big deal. But now, because of the state of the Grizzlies and the state of the Lakers, people are buying these things for $25. I think someone told me earlier that they got a ticket for $15. If you have not been able to get in to see LeBron, this is the night to get in to see LeBron, because I would wager to say that in the history of LeBron coming to Memphis, there has never been a cheaper ticket.
Oh, I think that's true. I'm looking at StubHub right now. You can get in the building for $12. You can get in the lower level for less than $130.
Right.
And like,
that's not typical.
That is not typical. But, I mean, I think people have sort of, I mean, listen, at the trade deadline, we start talking about, well, what is there to even look forward to going forward? And like, the main thing is, you know, they're going to unleash Jaren Jackson Jr. And now he's out maybe for the rest of this season. So that's off the table. Like, there's no, outside of like, I want to support my team, there's not a whole lot of basketball reasons to go to FedEx Forum to see the Grizzlies now. And the Lakers just aren't good and probably about to miss the playoffs.
And even like Jonas Valanciunas, you're interested in seeing him next to Jaren Jackson, right? You're interested in seeing how do they fit together for the long haul, if Jonas Valanciunas is going to be back, et cetera. But now it's just you can see Valanciunas, but you can't see him with Jaren Jackson. So that's an issue. We've obviously seen Chandler Parsons, so we had that little melodrama over the weekend as he returns, and he goes 1 out of 7 each of the two games. And some of that's just rust, but the truth of the matter is he can't move. I mean, that's I thought what Chris Harrington said was exactly right. It's not at this point, it's not a morality play. It's just a guy who's got shot knees. And so we sort of had that little press conference and the drama and everything about that. And so whatever, I guess if you want to find out if DeLon Wright's going to be like the point guard of the backup point guard of the future. But unfortunately, and this part isn't the Grizzlies, like a lot of this is the Grizzlies' fault. I mean, there's no question that a lot of they've made their own bed in many respects. But to have Dylan Brooks out, Kyle Anderson out, and Jaren Jackson Jr. out, who are the three guys who you sort of think, okay, those are going to be the young guys to build around that we know, they'll add whatever they add. But like those are the young pieces, and they're all out. And that's not anybody's fault. There's some conspiracies going around that the Grizzlies are tanking. No, they're not tanking. There's almost nothing in it at this point. Either way, they're not gonna be good enough to get to ninth, and they're gonna play the games. But they're not. Jaren Jackson is not sitting out because they're tanking. He's sitting out because they figure there's really very low stakes, and we don't want him to get injured because he is the centerpiece to build around. So it's kind of bad luck that it is bad luck that both, I mean, it would be fun to see Jaren Jackson and Kyle and Dylan. Like those are the three guys you want to see, and they're all gone. And that part is nobody's fault.
Well, I was talking to Woj earlier, and you know, we were discussing sort of the less than ideal situation the Grizzlies find themselves in, because on one hand you don't want to, you know, your prize rookie, you don't want to rush him back. You're overly cautious with him, and if that means he doesn't play again the rest of the season, then that's just what it means. On the other hand, you do want to put out the best lineup you can put out, because the goal was to convey this pick to Boston this year. And Woj's point, and I think it's right, he was like, yeah, but, like, you know, they were losing with him. Like, the point being, like, right. why rush him back to lose games with him in the lineup as opposed to lose games without him in the lineup? It really doesn't matter. Combine that with the fact that I got a text message earlier today from somebody who works for the Grizzlies asking me about a possible lottery pick and if I knew why he got suspended. Point being that they're not conveying the pick now.
Oh, I mean, they're going to finish. Actually, we're back to the Zion thing.
In a week, guys. A week and a half ago, we were seeing the opposite.
Even then, it was a long shot. Right. I mean, they said that's our goal, but that was one of the reasons I questioned them saying it at that point was. It was not likely when Chris said we want to convey the pick, which was not, by the way, breaking news. They also said it before the season. Of course, they want to convey the pick. So, but even then, it was unlikely. But then, given the injuries and the losses that have come in between, they're going to finish sixth or seventh from the bottom, and the hope is that you jump up into the top. Let's be honest, two. I mean, that's really the hope. We're going to go into, we're going to have a lottery night party, and we're going to hope that they jump into the top two, because they are going to be six or seven from the bottom, and they'll be picking seventh or eighth in a draft that people can't really even be excited after two. I mean, not really that excited. Maybe three.
I think if you're in the top three, you can even
John Morant, RJ Barrett, and Zion.
Even if you end up being wrong, and John Morant and or RJ Barrett just ends up being a guy, you can at least talk yourself into them. Anything outside of the top three, you're like, yeah, we're probably just DeAndre Hunter will be nice, I guess, but you can't get excited about it.
No,
right, and
that's what she said.
That's where we're going to be. And then, I mean, the idea that next year, that they're just going to, they will be in a position, they are going to convey the pick in 2 years to Boston. Because the idea that next year, they will, I said this earlier last week on my show, they are going to be, just get ready for it. They are going to be, no matter almost what happens this summer, they're going to be picked to finish last in the West next year. Right? Who's going to be that pick finish under them? Nobody. They're going to be picked to finish last in the West next year. And, their lineup will be whatever. It'll be Valanciunas, and it'll be Jaren Jackson Jr., and it'll be Kyle Anderson, and it'll be maybe DeLon Wright. Maybe they'll go get another veteran point guard to fill in. I predict Conley will be traded, and then it'll be Dylan Brooks or whatever. Maybe they'll get a couple of draft picks, and that's going to be that's the lineup. Next year. And so that's not going to be a lineup that's going to be that's likely to convey the pick next year. And so they're going to end up, I think it's top six protected next year. So they're going to end up conveying an unprotected pick the next year to Boston. Simply going to happen. You might as well just accept it now.
And it'll be the number one pick in the draft.
No, probably will be.
Watch and see.
Who's that going to be? Yeah. Who's that going to be?
So 2021.
Yeah.
This is this year's juniors. This year's juniors.
Seattle Grizzlies by that point.
It's a dude.
Jalen Green. It's probably Jalen Green or Evan Mobley. Oh man, I saw Evan Mobley last summer.
Gary.
Woo, boy. Oh, Evan Mobley is nice.
It's going to be Jalen Green or Evan Mobley. It's going to be one of those guys that are going to go to Boston, and they should have been going to Memphis.
Holy crap.
And you don't want to shoot yourself.
Oh, my God.
This sucks.
I saw Evan Mobley, and I first time I'd ever seen him, and I was like, because he played, it was a high-profile game. Can't remember who he was playing against, but I was like, he's 2000, he's a class of 2020 kid, going to be in the NBA draft 2021, and person said, yeah. And I was like, where, and he's not the number one player in that class? I was like, how is he not the number one player in the class? And I was talking to recruiting analysts. They were like, well, we're going to move him to number one. I mean, he's like that level guy. And Mark Fox, the former head coach at Georgia, was there. Mark had worked with him with a camp earlier in the summer. Mark Fox was like, if he stays healthy, Hall of Fame guy. Because he's an awesome.
Oh, that's good to hear. That's great.
We're going to give up a Hall of Famer.
Because he's like awesome kid from a strong family. A lot of the stuff that people loved about Jaren Jackson, like he's an awesome prospect but comes from a strong family, two-parent home. Evan Mobley is that as well. And so there's no red flags from a personal perspective, and then he's awesome. Awesome on the court.
Well, Jeff Green was good.
This is what somebody told me about Evan Mobley. He's the closest thing to Kevin Durant at the same age since Kevin Durant was that age.
He's Kevin Durant.
And the
Jeff, are you hearing this?
Who needs 6-7 years of Kevin Durant? Right.
Oh, man.
That's not when you could have Jeff Green.
Yeah, got Jeff Green, though. Got Jeff Green, though. All right. I didn't mean to depress us both. Enjoy our King and Savior LeBron tonight.
I'm enjoying the King and Savior Jeremiah Martin. That's what I'm enjoying.
Oh, yeah. Jeremiah Martin, also our King and Savior. All right. I'll see you later.
See ya.
Bye-bye. That's Jeff Calkins here on 92.9 FM ESPN. We'll be back in a second.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN. Step my money fast and go fast, fast, fast like a Lambo. I be jumping off the stage, oh. Jumping, jumping, hey, hey. Crowd better save up. I can't believe we made it.
Thanks to Jeff Calkins joining me in that last segment. Again, he will be courtside tonight. Lakers, Grizzlies inside FedEx Forum. You can read his column later on tonight, dailymemphian.com. Hilarious. I get into that conversation with Jeff about conveying the pick because it now does look like they'll just convey the unprotected pick in 2021 to Boston because it doesn't look like they're going to be good enough to convey it this season. And if they're not good enough to convey it this season, really no reason on paper to think they're going to be good enough to convey it next season, which means they then convey it 2021 unprotected, where it could quite literally be the number one pick in the NBA draft. And none of this is breaking news, by the way. We've been talking about this for months, about the nightmare situation that involves them possibly moving the number one pick in the 2021 draft to the Boston Celtics. But I'd never actually considered the prospects that were in that class, even though I've seen most of the prospects that would be in that draft, like Jalen Green, Evan Mobley, RJ Hampton, Jalen Johnson, Scotty Barnes. Like, I've seen these guys play. I just never really thought about who the Grizzlies might actually miss out on in 2021 if they had the number one pick and then had to move that pick to the Boston Celtics. And though Jalen Green is, I think, most people's number one player in that class, it would be the high school class of 2020. So players who are juniors in high school right now. They would be seniors in high school next year, then freshmen in college in the 2020-21 season, then presumably in the NBA draft 2021. Mobley's the one I've seen that I like the most. I told the story briefly. I'll expand on it a little bit. There was a game in Vegas last July.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. It was a big game. Oh, I think I know what it was. I'm remembering all this in real time.
Yeah, sure.
It was the first time anybody could remember the best Adidas team played the best Nike team.
Okay, I remember you being at the game.
In the summer. That was the big deal.
Huge deal.
The way grassroots basketball works is there's an Under Armour circuit, there's a Nike circuit, there's an Adidas circuit, and the Adidas teams don't play the Nike teams. It's just like Nike doesn't want to... You know, they want to have their own little thing and basically pretend the rest of the world doesn't exist. Adidas wants to have its own little thing, basically pretend the rest of the world doesn't exist. But the best Adidas team was like clear cut the best Adidas team. And the best Nike team was like clear cut the best Nike team. And so Gary Charles, who's been in the grassroots scene for a long time, worked hand in hand with Sonny Vaccaro for a long time, like negotiated a deal where they would play out in Vegas. Just a one-off game, best Nike team against best Adidas team. Let's see who really is the best grassroots basketball team in the country. So they schedule this thing out in Vegas, and it's jam-packed. I mean, gym's not too big, but it's jam-packed. Like on a Wednesday night in Las Vegas. The game started late. It was like 10. It was late. Mm-hmm. Place was packed, though, because this was, I don't know if it was unprecedented, but very, very rare to get Nike's best against Adidas best on the court against each other.
Yeah.
And the team that won was the Adidas team led by Evan Mobley. Now, he's got a brother who is older than him. And if you don't know the story, two brothers, they're a year apart, both going to end up going to USC because USC hired their father.
I remember that deal.
It really might be the dumb thing that Steve Alford didn't do.
Right.
Like Steve Alford had a place on his staff as well. He hired Murray Barto, who doesn't have any kids who can help you. Andy Enfield at USC hired the Mobley father, and then he gets the Mobley brothers. And Evan, the younger one's a little bit like the Lawsons, where the young AJ and Diedrich, the younger one's the better one. Here, the younger one is the better one, and that's Evan Mobley, and he is awesome. I mean, awesome. Legit 7 foot, 6'11", wow. 7 foot now, but very comfortable, you know, playing on the perimeter.
Sure.
Shoots the ball naturally from the three-point line. And it was the first time I had ever seen him because he played on the Adidas circuit, and I usually go to Nike events, Peach Jam and whatever. So I'm watching him, and I'm like, you know, and at this time it's the July after his sophomore year of high school. So I haven't seen him 50 times by then. But I'm watching, and it's just so clear. Like, you don't even have to know anything. You don't have to know his name. You don't have to know he's a consensus five-star prospect.
Right.
You're just watching the game, and you go, okay, he's different than the rest of these dudes.
Right.
Like, everybody on the court is a high major player, but this dude's different. You know, I can remember, you know, you see prospects like that sometimes. I tell people, like, you don't have to know anything about basketball to walk into a gym and see Derrick Rose and go, okay, he's different.
Yep.
To walk into a gym and see Greg Oden in high school and go, okay, that dude's different.
This dude was like that.
Undeniable.
Wow.
You don't have to know anything about him. You just have to go,
oh, man.
Oh, he's different. Yeah. These are all high major prospects, five-star, four-star guys. And this one dude is just so much better than everybody else. It's like crazy.
Wow.
So that's Evan Mobley guy's like, yeah. I'm like, how do you guys not, like, I'm not a recruiting analyst, and I acknowledge I'm just seeing him for the first time, and you've seen him 20 times, but like, how is he not the best player in his class?
Right.
'Cause this is crazy. They were like, well, you know, have you seen Jalen Green? I'm like, yeah, but this dude.
Guy.
And, you know, it was like, yeah, we probably should move in there, or we will move in there.
You're right.
But a total coincidence, Mark Fox, the former Georgia coach, former Nevada coach, then was at Georgia, got fired last year, replaced by Tom Crean. He was there, and Mark was like, you know, I worked with the Mobleys earlier this summer, like at a camp. And I was like, so how are they? He said, oh, both top shelf kids, come from a good family, no issues as kids whatsoever. Like, so that you got strong backgrounds. Yes, sir. No, sir. They listen. They work. Like, literally no red flags at all. And I said, what do you think of Evan Mobley, the younger
one?
He's like, he said two things. Closest thing we've had to Kevin Durant at the same age since Kevin Durant at that same age. All right?
Wow.
And then if he stays healthy, he can be a Hall of Fame player. Like, not if he stays healthy, he can be really good. If he stays healthy, he looks like a future Hall Star. Like, if he stays healthy and continues to develop at the rate he's developing, because he's not one of those guys, you don't need him to grow. He's already 7 foot. So you don't have to worry about, you know, if he grows, if he gets 3 inches, he's already there. Like, if he he's already skilled enough to do the things at his height. He's doing them at the age of 16. So there's no reason to think he won't be doing them at 19, 22, and even better. And so he's like, if he stays healthy and continues to develop at this rate, like, he's a Hall of Fame guy type guy. And I'm like, geez.
Can you imagine if in 2021 this dude comes out and we miss that pick?
Oh, not only can I imagine, it's
likely.
Well, I don't know if it's a likely scenario, but if you can see that the Grizzlies aren't going to be good anytime soon, not good enough to convey this year, not good enough to convey this year, then they convey unprotected 2021. And if they're not that good that year, they'll have good lottery odds relative to the rest of the franchises in the NBA. And then absolutely, even if it's just like not the number one pick, but if it's a top two pick, you're missing out on Jalen Green or Evan Mobley.
Oh, thanks for the upside.
So it's a little bit like you hear about these issues in our country. Right. And it's just like, oh, yeah, I heard about, you know, we got a problem in this country. But then you put a name and a face on it. You go, okay, we just don't have an opioid epidemic in our country. We got an opioid epidemic in our country, and it killed my uncle.
Right.
You know, like, you've got a real story to it. I had not put the name and the face.
This is our opioid problem,
to the
basically.
2021 draft up until earlier when I was talking to Jeff. Like, I knew the Grizzlies were at risk of losing a top pick in the 2021 draft. I didn't quite piece it together and go, okay, it's not just a pick. It's Evan Mobley. They might really miss out on Evan Mobley in the 2021 NBA draft. Now I'm depressed. Yep. Anyway, Grizzlies back in action inside FedEx Forum tonight. We'll talk about that next. Matt and Tara had a home out in Kyrville, right? They listed it with another agent for months, just couldn't get anything done. And then they finally listed it with Josh Hysaw. Right away, they got 20 showings, and the home sold in less than a week for more than they anticipated. Now, how did Josh Hysaw do that? By now, you should know he did it with his 45-day guarantee. It's a system for selling homes that creates more demand and gets homes sold faster and for more money than the average agent. The first step has him helping you price your home in a way that makes it attractive to buyers. you guys agree on a price, then Josh goes to work. And then if your home isn't sold in 45 days at that agreed upon price, Josh will step in and make the mortgage payments until it sells, or he'll simply buy the home from you. You pick. It's totally up to you, and it's a risk-free proposition. Working with Josh doesn't obligate you to anything. If he isn't doing his job, in your opinion, even if your opinion makes no sense, you can fire him, no questions asked. You can even do it with a simple text message. He has flexible fees. There are no upfront costs. So if you're trying to sell a home, use the only real estate agent I would use if I wanted to sell my home. It's Josh Hysall, 461-8147, 461-8147. It's on the web, joshsellsthemidsouth.com.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Off top, get guap, the hood dot, heavy metal like Slipknot. I hustle for my chain like a pit stop. I used to want a grip brain to my wrist lock. Ooh, now I want a BMW i3. It's little but it's on point like Kyrie. My mama taught me never let a sucker try me. But if he do, draw blood like an IV. I'm a lover, not a fighter dog. But I learned most.
Sleepy Z's Mattresses and Furniture by Michael Zellner is not your traditional mattress and furniture store. The prices are always 50% to 80% off retail stores, so they don't have to have sales. They're already killing the competition 52 weeks a year. They got an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. And when readers of the Commercial Appeal were asked to vote for the best mattress store in the area, the winner now, four consecutive years, is Sleepy Z. But remember, they don't just sell mattresses. Also furniture, living room sets, dining room sets, rugs. Anything you need to furnish a home, you can probably find it at Sleepy Z's. And if it's not on the floor, understand there's a 42-inch kiosk there filled with furniture for you to browse through. Find what you want. They'll get it for you. And remember, if you tell them you heard about them on the Gary Parish Show, you'll save an additional 10% on your purchase. That's at Sleepy Z's Mattresses and Furniture by Michael Zellner. 2790 Kirby Whitten in Bartlett at the corner of Summer Avenue next door to Hollywood Feed. The number is 692-6200, 692-6200. That's Sleepy Z's on the web, sleepyzzs.com. Let's do Dinner to Go.
Dinner to Go is presented by Humphrey's Prime Cut Shop, a Folks Folly original.
It's Dinner to Go. What did we learn today?
A whole bunch of stuff, but in addition to the protest down at Ole Miss, we focused mostly on the Grizzlies and on the continued incredible play of Jeremiah Martin. Tigers will be back inside FedEx Forum tomorrow night against Temple, a team that they've already played once, lost that game up in Philly. Now the Owls will be inside FedEx Forum, and the Tigers will be favored in that game. And among the obvious storylines, like can Memphis continue to win to try to get a top four seed in the AAC tournament, all eyes will be on Jeremiah Martin. He had 37 points this weekend in that win at Wichita State and is now averaging 30.7 points per game in the Tigers' past seven games. He's the main reason they were able to overcome a 16-point deficit and beat a not great but not terrible Wichita State team on the road. So nice win for the Tigers. 4-1 in their past five games. Lone loss in that stretch, single-digit loss at Central Florida. That's a single-digit loss on the road to a likely NCAA tournament team. Next up, Temple, tomorrow night.
What's the biggest game tonight?
Lakers-Grizz, FedEx Forum, downtown Memphis. Our king and savior, LeBron James, in
the house. I'll be there tonight. I'm going to the game. I'm going to go see the king.
You taking your boy to see the king?
No.
You're not taking your son to see the king?
I'm going to go sit in media. I don't have tickets.
He could worship the king tonight.
I'd love for him to worship the king, Gary.
Why would you not give your son an opportunity to worship the king?
It's a school night.
How often do we have kings in town? How often do we have kings in town?
You don't make me feel guilty, man. I'm just trying to go. I'm trying to build a relationship with the Grizzlies. I'm trying to support my team and trying to go as a media member.
So Mr. Big Chest Brad Carson will be in the building.
I'll be there.
Little Jake won't, but Brad will.
I'm sorry, Jake, if you're listening.
29-30, that's the Lakers' record right now. They're going to have to get going if they're going to make the playoffs. Yeah. Grizzlies, of course, 23-38. The Lakers are a five-point favorite tonight inside the Grindhouse. Tip is scheduled for 7. Pre-game show is coming up next.
What should I watch on TV?
Well, Wreck-It Ralph is on Starz at 6:15 if you love Wreck-It Ralph. The Voice is on NBC at 7. The Bachelor is on ABC at 7. Raw is on USA Network at 7. The Usual Suspects on Cinemax Extra at 7. There's a new documentary on HBO tonight at 9 o'clock. It's called It's a Hard Truth, Ain't It? And here's the description. Inmates at Indiana's Pendleton Correctional Facility study documentary filmmaking as a vehicle to explore their memories from childhood to incarceration. So that might be interesting. The reviews are actually good. Starts at 9 o'clock on HBO. If you're up late, Katy Perry going to be on Jimmy Kimmel, Jeff Daniels on Jimmy Fallon, Chris Christie on Stephen Colbert, John Legend on Seth Meyers, Steph Curry going to be on James Corden.
Is there anything I need to make sure I read?
Yeah, Dan Wetzel posted a column, Yahoo Sports, earlier this afternoon on the report that Sean Miller, Arizona coach, and LSU coach Will Wade have both been subpoenaed or have been notified that they will be subpoenaed to testify in the Christian Dawkins case that's coming up later this calendar year, which means two high-profile basketball coaches who have recruited five-star prospects are going to have to put their hand on the Bible and swear to tell the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help them God. And I'll keep this simple because I had a couple people ask me, well, you know, you think they can survive this? And the answer is maybe. I don't know. We'll see. But I don't know how you can testify honestly when you are asked about recruiting and not say something that jeopardizes your job.
Right.
Particularly when you've recruited at the level at which they've recruited. You can either, with few exceptions, you can either perjure yourself, you know, you can just lie and hope you don't get caught. But if you tell the truth to these questions that are going to be asked, like even if you haven't done anything illegal, you probably are going to admit to breaking NCAA rules, or at least having conversations that suggest you were willing to break NCAA rules. It's just a hard place to be. Last thing a college coach wants to do is be testifying about recruiting, but here we go. So go read that, Yahoo Sports.
What's on tap for tomorrow?
It'll be Tuesday. We'll look back at Lakers Grizzlies. Get ready for Tigers Tempo. I have Easterwood in the first hour. He's the legend. Jeff Calkins will join me in the second. Should be fun. Enjoy your night. I'm going to enjoy mine. We're going to be back here tomorrow at 4. Till then, be careful. Be kind. Be good. Rep your hood.